My name's Edith Bowman and welcome along to the second episode of the Friends of Rush podcast. It's our way of keeping you up to date about the journey of Rush from the old to the new, and along the way we meet some very wonderful and inspiring friends of the skate park who are very much part of the journey, excited about the journey, and can kind of really personally tell us why Rush means so much to them and why it's important that we try our very, very best to make sure that a brand new world-class state-of-the-art facility is made available to all. Along the way, we also answer some of your questions. Debbie Bird is available and on hand to answer as many questions as you guys can get into us, and you'll find details on how you can submit those questions towards the end of the episode. But first, let's start off by meeting three wonderful young people who, well, we'll let them tell the story. We're back in the Old Lodge. We must say thank you to the Old Lodge for giving us the little small room that we come to chat in here. And we've got another brilliant collection of people to just talk to us about their relationship to Rush and how it was important to them and what they miss about it, what it gave them, what it inspired them to do, and kind of their hopes, I guess, for the future of Rush and this brilliant new prospect that we have of a new Rush. So I'm going to go around the table and introduce everybody, or get them to introduce themselves. So I'll start on my left.
My name's Jay, and I've been riding a scooter ever since I can remember, really. And I picked one up about the age of 12. And then not too long after that, I discovered Rush. And then not shortly after that, about the age of 13, I became a sponsored rider, and the rest is really history. And then from the ages of 13 till the day of closure, there was not one day I didn't spend at the skate park.
Wow.
Made close friends like Freddie and Ben. And I just can't wait to have my life back with a new park.
My name is Freddie. I'm 14 years old, and I've been riding a scooter since I was three, so 10 plus years. I discovered Rush when I was probably around six, and since that day I've never missed a day, really, been there.
And I must say at this point as well, congratulations. I believe
you
recently took part in a competition. Tell us a little bit about that.
So I participated in a competition called Scoot GB,
yeah,
which is the Great Britain, you know, like the finals. I placed second in that, and I'm really happy with that.
Whoa, that's awesome. Congratulations.
My name's Ben. I have been with Rush practically since it opened its doors, around 2013-14 time. I'm originally from a small town in Cornwall, and I've been riding scooters ever since they kind of became more of like a more or less a mainstream thing. I guess they weren't particularly mainstream at the time, but I was around 15. Mm. And I moved up to Cheltenham for university around kind of 2012, and Rush opened in 2013. Mm. So that was straight on my radar as being the next best thing to happen to the UK, really, for the sport. From there, I got in touch with Jerry and Michelle, and I ended up working there, and I ended up relocating from Cornwall to Stroud to work at Rush. And then I was there from when it opened up until when it closed.
Mm.
Sadly, so
yeah, this is a scooter episode. This is lovely because I think a lot of people will assume with skate parks that it's just skateboards, but mm-hmm. but there are a whole number of sports around skate parks that give people the opportunity. So tell me a little bit about the kind of, because it feels as well that the world of scootering, I mean, my kids did it when we used to come and visit before we moved here. My my little ones, we ended up giving them for Christmas, and they would stay here, so it was the only place really where they could scoot. So they'd come and they'd be so excited to go down there. Tell me a little bit about the history of scooting and how it's become, you know, a proper kind of really great sport, an inspiring sport really as well.
For sure. So with skate parks, the first thing to understand with them is that there are four main sports that make up the skate park area, essentially. Obviously, you've got skateboarding, which was then quickly followed by BMX and inline, and then scooter, which is the kind of latest sport to come out of that space. It's essentially an amalgamation of BMX and skateboard. So you've got BMX tricks alongside skateboard grinds and that kind of thing. It's a little bit of a mashup. But what makes scootering so individual is that it's very easy to jump on and get involved. You don't have to be particularly skilled straight from the start to be able to get involved with scootering. The basics are pretty simple. But when you get past the basics, it's when it starts to really pick up and become something extra. So you're seeing people now, in the very short time that scootering has been a sport, it's gone from us doing very basic tricks like tail whips, bri flips, bar spins, this kind of thing, to where people are now doing tricks such as like the nothing front scooter flip, which is where you basically jump off the scooter, it does a front flip as you throw it, and then you get back on it in the air. Jay is quite well known for doing those in combinations.
His little face is like beaming thinking about it.
Yeah, that's it. He's lit up already. But yeah, so scootering has a really easy learning curve to start with, which makes it so accessible for people, which is why it's so popular and such an important sport. Again, skate parks have historically been quite reliant on the scooter because of this fact. You can have kids come in, start off, as Freddie said, from like the age of three, and then ride all the way up until however old you want to be. And, you know, that is a constant source of participation for skate parks.
And where have you seen the growth of the sport since, you know, you got involved with it, and particularly with places like Rush and how they propel the sport into not just the kind of minds and lives of children and young people, but also with regards to the world of sport?
Sure. So indoor skate parks are incredibly important, especially in the UK, because as you can imagine, we get about 4 months a year where the weather's nice, and then the rest of the time it's miserable and horrible and you can't really ride outside. So we're reliant on these spaces to exist to be able to continue on with the sport. If we didn't have indoor parks, then skateboarding, BMXing, scootering, inline skate, all of these sports would be essentially 8 months a year behind. And, you know, that quickly stacks up. So these places are incredibly important just to have access to.
And I guess as well on a world stage as well, because there's because we, you know, the idea that we're on the journey to create a world class indoor facility. But where does the UK stand and its kind of riders and stuff in terms of on a world class stage within the sport?
So I'll pass over to you in a minute, Jay, for this one. But the UK is very high up on an international standpoint. We have people travel from the USA, Australia, New Zealand, you know, the rest of mainland Europe, all over the place. People travel here for our indoor skate parks. We've just got such a plethora of great facilities. I mean, among them, the top mentions are going to be Adrenaline Alley, which, I mean, sees so many people travel here literally just for that facility on its own, let alone great parks like Junction 4, Asylum Skate Park, parks up in Scotland as well. You've got like Unit 23, real, real big names. And the UK is only going to get better where that's concerned as well. But again, we have so many great indoor parks because we need to have them, because our weather just doesn't compare with the rest of, you know, the rest of the competing world.
Yeah.
Even in places such as like, you know, Spain, Australia, most of the United States, especially in California and that kind of area where it's super popular, it's mostly warm climates.
Yeah.
And again, it's something we just don't have here.
I'm going to come to you two in just a second. One last thing though, Ben, just with regards to when you started working at Rush and personally seeing what that facility was and what your perception of what it was when you started, to being part of that team and that family, to what it was when those doors closed. What was it to people? What was, how would you describe how important Rush was to you, the community, young people, families?
Rush was far more than just a skate park, in that it very quickly became a centre for the community, a community centre as it were, a place that the youth could go to, you know, be safe, have a safe place, a place where athletes could go to train and to better themselves, and a place where parents and, again, like I said, communities could just go to hang out, be in a nice, warm, friendly environment. You know, food was provided, this kind of thing. You could see your kids or who you're here to watch riding up on the big screen, so you knew where people were at all times. You know, it was an all-inclusive zone that just made people feel at home, welcomed and wanted. And that is something that has just gone from the area.
Great birthday parties as well. Oh my goodness, there's so many birthday parties at Rush, so many.
We may have run a few coaching sessions for them, eh?
Yeah. Jade, you know, a couple of things there that Ben mentioned that, that you kind of really physically reacted to, which was, you know, that idea of kind of the UK and where that, talk to me a little bit about where you see that, but also how you're involved in that.
Well, especially over the last couple months, especially over the last year, I'd say, I've been competing at the top level. I've been really pushing my competition game, and I've been competing with the best riders from the UK, from over the world.
And the thing I was going to say, which is really important, is you go to all these big competitions, you go to the biggest competitions that, not even just in the UK, but in the world, and you're going to be very surprised if you don't see a UK name in a top three spot. Like, that's how
including
good.
You?
Yeah, sometimes. Like, I came second, no, third on the weekend.
Just come third.
Yeah.
Amazing, well done.
Not too bad.
Welsh Championships.
Yeah,
well
Welsh
done.
Championships, third place. But going back to what I was saying about the actual skate parks itself as well, is we've got these facilities and we've got all these crazy, crazy riders. But now for people like me, Freddie and Ben and all the Rush locals, we have to travel 2+ hours to get to these. And it wasn't too bad with Rush because obviously, again, 20 minutes down the road, it was fine. But if me or like any other riders at my level want to go and train properly and have a good riding, like full-on day of riding, you're gonna have to drive like over 2.5 hours to get to a decent facility, and that's the only thing really that really puts a nail in the coffin really.
Yeah, for you, in terms of when you, you know, when you were talking about when you first went to Rush, and in terms of similarly what I asked Ben, in terms of, oh, you're like, great, this is a great, you know, facility sort of thing, but did it very quickly become more than just somewhere that you went to skate?
Oh, very quick. Rush was a family. Like, there was no doubt about it. Like, I would find myself going to Rush some days, not even to ride, literally just to see people or just for something to do, really.
Yeah.
Even if I wasn't in the mood to pick up my scooter, I'd still be at the facility because that's how much it meant to me and other people. It was my life. It was everything.
It must be incredibly hard then when that was taken away from you.
Yeah, 2021 wasn't really a good year for me. I lost a close friend as well just before.
Sorry.
And then obviously lost Rush, so it was all kind of downhill. But it's things like this that really put the hope up, and hopefully we'll have something back soon.
It's amazing for you to be involved, to kind of see that the, you know, to for you to help, for it to help you in terms of there
really
being light.
Does, mentally.
Does it?
Yeah, 100%. Because if I was just sat at home and just kind of let it die out, then I'd be obviously sad and in my tears. But knowing that every few weeks, obviously with the help of Debbie, that we can come together and do things like this, or even just have the normal meetings or the fundraiser days, and it shows the community as well that we are fighting for it, that we really do want this place back. It's not like, oh, we're just waiting for someone to come around and
do it for you,
do it for us. Like, the people who are involved are really involved, if you know what I mean.
How important is it for you to be a voice in, you know, in this journey? Because I imagine that you've, you know, a combination of the experiences you had at Rush, but the fact that you are, you know, traveling to other facilities, you're competing professionally, that kind of thing, you must have a lot to input into those meetings, into the idea of what you want this place to be. What do you want it to be?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of the boots on the ground kind of guy. I hear
in the field.
Yeah, I hear everything. And still, when I'm at these other skate parks, the only thing I really hear from people is like, oh, what's going on with Rush, what's going on with this, which proves it wasn't just missed by us. There were riders that came from hours away that did like the facility and want it back as well, to show it wasn't just Stroud, Gloucestershire kind of thing. It is UK wide,
and I feel like it's worth putting in as well that it's beyond UK wide as well, because like you've just said, with these riders, I've spoken to riders very recently from New Zealand and the United States that have said exactly the same thing. What's happening with Rush?
Wow, God, look at the hairs on my arms just sitting in. That's amazing.
I think the best thing for that, though, was it 2014 World Finals? Obviously, because that was held at Rush.
Okay.
And that was when the sport first started to pick up. This was before my time. This was before I rode. But they'd done the World Championships, obviously, as Rush opened their doors. Mm. And it kind of blew the facility up. And then ever since then, there wasn't one person that didn't recognise that orange cereal bowl.
There was Scootfest. Was it Scootfest 2018, Ben? Or there's one that was held at Rush. And I remember the weekend, it was just a brilliant weekend. All the riders from around the world were there. Your friends were there. It was a good atmosphere.
What about for you, Freddie? What when you think about what your experience of the, you know, the Rush of the past was, what did it mean to you? What
it
was
meant
it to
anything,
you?
Really. So on the weekends, in the day weeks, you can message your friends, call them, saying if they're going to Rush. And it wasn't just a place to, you know, just ride. Like Jay said, even if you wasn't in the mood to ride, you could just go down there, have fun, talk, and just chill, really. It wasn't just a riding facility. You could do anything there.
How did you guys find out that it was closing? How did you find out about that?
Well, obviously, especially us three, we weren't really like public to Rush. We were kind of like the people behind it. We were really close with Jerry and Michelle. Mm-hmm. Obviously, me and Ben weren't there, and also me and Freddie were sponsored riders for the park, and so word just kind of gets around. And then, because there was talks about it shutting like before COVID. Yeah. And then obviously COVID happened, and then it kind of seemed like we were back on our legs, but then no, obviously we still had to go at some point, and then it caught up to us in 2021.
Do you remember your first day at Rush? First time you went?
I do.
I mean, do you? You were three, so I very much doubt that you remember being three. But why scooters? Is it what Ben was talking about being an easy, a kind of a great starting
so
point?
So I have a skate park that's down the road. It's an outdoor skate park, and I used to go down with my dad that most every weekends to walk the dog, and there used to be always people, because it was like a newish park when I started riding. Everyone was just on scooters. You didn't really see a BMX riders there, and I seen loads of people do tricks, and that's when I started to, I asked for a scooter for Christmas, and I was down there every day. My dad was saying to me the other day, I was around there like 9 hours a day, just on the skate park.
That's amazing. Jay, you remember that first day?
I sure do.
Smile from ear to ear just with that memory.
I think I was about 12.
Yeah.
12 or 11. I was just starting off secondary school. And what it was is obviously the thing at the time that everyone was doing was scooters. Scooters, scooters, scooters. And we were down at my local skate park in Cam. And there was a kid there called Mason. And his dad was down there, really friendly, would talk to all of us, just like be like, yeah, you got that trick type of thing. Really positive parent. And he was like, oh, have you heard about Rush? I was like, what? I was like, what's that? And he was like showing me videos of his little boy on the ramps at this massive skate park. And he was like, yeah, it's only 20 minutes away, it's in Stroud. I've ran home. And I'm like, dad, we've got to go, And then that weekend, my old man took me up. It took us about 45 minutes to find it because we didn't know where the turn-in was. Got in, was greeted by Reese's lovely smile on the door. And then, rest is history, really.
It's amazing to think about how something that can instantly kind of create a community, that, and also just how welcoming it can be to someone new, you know, in terms of you guys have obviously got, you know, long-standing relationship with the crew and the team behind it. But in terms of someone new coming along and kind of having somewhere where they feel, you know, they can be part of it.
Yeah.
That they got a tribe, they've got a people.
You did see it a lot of time through Rush. There would be the main group of riders, I'd say. There's always like the main group. It was like me, Freddie, Ferdy, Ben,
Ethan.
But then through the years, you'd see people come and people go. And it's just how it went, really. But no matter who they were, it always was a good time.
Yeah.
Like.
And I guess it is that combination, you know, people talk a lot about how physical exercise is so important for your mental health. Mm-hmm. But that combination of the physical side of it, but also the community, the support, the friendship of what Rush was, must have been a massively important thing for all of your mental health, I imagine, in terms of that situation.
Yeah, lockdown definitely did a toll on me, I won't lie. Because where people have their escapes, I should say, where everyone has their thing when they're sad, when they're a bit down, that they can go and do, and it just lets them break away from reality.
Yeah.
Mine was definitely just going to Rush and putting my headphones in and just cruising about. Even if I like was only sad for 10 minutes, like it would help, do you know what I mean? And it would just ease everything.
Would you say then that the being involved in this project and the you know, with the hope and the dream being this new Rush, that's helped? That's been something to channel, you know, almost channel that energy into?
In the beginning, it was still a lot, I'd say, because obviously we just lost lost the park, and it was really tolling on me. But especially over the last, I'd say, month or 2 months, I've realised that we're gonna get the new park. I'm 99% sure it's gonna happen, and it's really lifted my spirits, and it just makes me want it now.
Yeah.
It makes me want to fight for it, because there was obviously moments where, like in my head, I was like, "Oh, is it gonna happen? Is it not gonna happen?" But I think I can say now that we're gonna get it.
What do you want it to be?
Since Rush shut, everyone really quit what they're doing. So if people doing BMX and scooters, you normally see them there every weekend. They don't really ride anymore. So I think that when the new park opens, I want to see everyone come back together and like ride and chill, really. Like, since it's shut, most of the people quit. So some of my friends actually quit scooters and I don't know what they do now, but I think when the new Rush opens, I want to see them come back and, you know, have fun together.
How important is competing to you, Freddie?
Since Rush shut, like I say, it was really hard to, you know, practice. Like, you have some people, locals, Adrenaline Alley, so they have like a lot of, you know, they can practice whenever they want.
Yeah.
When Rush was open, you could practice whenever, but since Rush shut, you don't really have a way to practice. So say if it was a competition on a Saturday, on like a Friday, you'd be able to practice at Rush, but you can't really do that anymore.
Jay, what about for you? What do you want it to be?
I want the new Rush to be a home again. I want it to be somewhere where I just haven't got to stress about anything, and somewhere where I feel like it's my place, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Somewhere I can go and chill and obviously just bring back old memories and stuff like that.
Create new ones.
Yeah, definitely.
And win competitions.
Yeah, too right.
Well, that's the other thing as well, as you're talking about, you know, if you think about kind of what Rush was in terms of, you know, Ben, you're talking about it being somewhere on a world stage that has got this reputation already. Mm. Imagine what it can be in the future with regards to all your guys' input into this new park, and what do you hope the new Rush could be?
Well, again, Jay's answer is pretty spot on, I think, especially from the outlook of the riders themselves. From my standpoint as well, I currently run Scoot GB, which is the National Federation for UK Scooter Riding. So what I'm looking for in the new park is a facility that is up to the standards for athletes to come train, practice, compete, and be on that world stage alongside everybody else. There are other parks in the UK that do provide similar facilities at the moment. However, like Jay has also said, it takes travel, and there's a lot of people around and about this area especially that have that talent that need to succeed, that don't have the opportunity to travel that far.
Yeah.
And, you know, the South is currently really missing a facility of that scale and of that standard, essentially. I mean, you've got parks up in the north of England, you've got parks in the Midlands, but currently there's nothing for scootering and BMXing that are up to national competition standards in the south of England.
And where does it stand in terms of things like, I don't know, Olympics and all that kind of stuff? You know, it's brilliant when you see kind of sports being welcomed into those kind of official, you know, world stages, I guess. Where does scooting sort of stand in that kind of...
So scootering's looking to be in a fairly decent position, actually, in regards to the Olympic Games. Obviously, skateboarding has just made its debut alongside freestyle BMX, which is wonderful to see.
So exciting to watch.
It's brilliant to watch. And I mean, we had...
It's so successful as well.
Very successful.
It's brilliant.
And we had freestyle BMX riders training at Rush for the Olympics. So Charlotte Worthington, Declan Brooks, James Jones...
Again, there's every hair on my arm standing
there.
There
you go. They did come down to Rush to train for the Olympic Games. And so that park has seen Olympic athletes training who have obviously gone on to win gold, in Charlotte's case, in those games. So it's an incredibly valuable facility. Now, scootering is a much younger sport than any of the other ones mentioned. So skateboarding, you know, it's got 60-year history, good solid 60-year history. BMX, slightly less, probably about 50. And inline, then a little bit less again, probably about 40. Scootering is roughly coming up to around the 20-year mark.
Yeah.
25 years tops, probably. However, it has seen such an explosive growth among the action sports community that it has skyrocketed in popularity. And, you know, the skills that people are showing that they have on scooters is ridiculous and has been noted already by WorldSkate, who are, as of, I think, about 4 weeks ago, officially recognised as a partner of the Olympic Federation, which
Amazing.
Is brilliant. And so scootering does fall under that. I believe the only one that doesn't is BMX, because that is British Cycling.
Okay.
But skateboarding, inline and scootering all fall under that World Skate Federation, of which skateboarding, of course, is already in the games through the pathways provided. So scootering isn't far behind. We are currently very hopeful for a 2028 scootering debut, which would coincide quite nicely with the development and the opening of a new Rush skate park.
That is that's a great like thing to aim for, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Brilliant.
So to add to that as well, we have just seen the Scooter World Championships, the World Skate Scooter World Championships happen. That was last weekend.
Yeah, Saturday and Sunday.
Two UK riders did come first and second respectively. So we had Jordan Clark, who is now world number one, and Jaden Sharman, world number two. That was live streamed on the Olympic Network, which again is another massive win for scootering.
Where was it held?
That was in Madrid.
Oh, nice.
Very nice.
Yeah, totally. And something for you two to aim for as well in terms of, you know, that I guess, thinking that your sport could potentially be Olympic recognised as well.
That's the thing, really, is obviously with all the parks now, like Adrenaline Alley, Asylum, they are made as skate parks, I should say. The whole thing with Rush is it's going to be a training facility. Like, people behind here at Rush know what the potential could be.
Yeah, I feel like we've got a massive opportunity with the park to take what has been done before and move with that, but also focusing on the Olympic side of things to make a facility that is truly to standard. They've seen what's been done in the past and they know the mistakes that have been made, so they can take those forward, get rid of those, and you know, push on with something that is what is required, essentially. There has never really been a skate park anywhere in the world that has been designed with this kind of level of foresight, I suppose, where we've had an Olympic Games, we've had BMX and skateboarding in those games. Yeah. We know what is expected now. Everything else predates those games. So this is the opportunity to go in, know what we actually need and what is expected from an Olympic park, and actually go and build it.
Where are the 2028 Olympics happening?
LA.
LA.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
LA.
Because we've got
Jay
going
Freddy.
To the Netherlands.
Just have LA in sight. Yeah, that's what I'm. That's all I'm saying.
That's the one.
Yeah, get applying for that ESTA, that visa. Get over there.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Oh man, that's so exciting. What a lovely. But I mean, that almost kind of feels like the perfect thing to have there as a kind of like, come on, we can do it. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah. Oh, listen, thank you all for being here today and telling me your stories and how important Rush continues to be for you, and the fact that you're being part of this journey and how important that is for you. It's great to chat to you. Thanks so much.
And thank you for having us.
There we go. How awesome was Ben, Jay and Freddie? Just wonderful young humans, but just their enthusiasm and connection that they have with Rush and its community is awesome. Right, let's hear from Debbie Bird. If you are tuning into the podcast for the first time, Debbie's got such a long-standing history with the Rush community. She started as a trustee of the old Rush, and she's the one who kind of started the petition to keep Rush open for longer and started the initial fundraising. She's kind of the heart and soul of the committee, really. And she will pop up on every episode of the podcast answering your questions. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
How are you?
Yeah, I'm good.
Back for episode two.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe it.
I just thought it'd be really nice to kind of almost like set out almost our terms and conditions in a way, in terms of if people want to submit questions, because I know that what's been really nice with the response that I've had from episode one is people are loving finding out the story, going, oh, now I know what happened. Now I know what the plans are. I've got a question. If people have a question, how do they get that to you so that we can maybe address it on the podcast in future episodes, or something that you can address?
Okay. So we've got a website, which is rushskatepark.org. So it's really important to remember it's org, not the old one, which was .co.uk. There is a link on there. They can also just email, and it's getinvolved@rushskatepark.org. And those emails come straight through to me.
Great.
And I respond really quickly because they come up on my phone and I get really excited. We have fundraising events going on as well, and we're really open. We've got a crowdfunder, so that's it's on crowdfunder, and it's just I think it's forward slash p forward slash skate park, so it's quite easy to find. And anyone can set up their own fundraiser on that as well, or they can just donate.
which we had a bit of donation.
And we've already had some donations in because of the last podcast, which is great. Yeah, and you know, we're open to anyone publicising, sharing on social media, all of those sorts of things.
I think that's another good thing as well, is we'll make sure that the crowdfund link is up on the social media pages so that people can just easily kind of click straight through to you. So Friends of Rush on Instagram, for example. And we'll put that up on the details on this podcast as well. So if you just go to the page for the podcast, everything will be up there as well. But what kind of questions are people throwing at you? What's the kind of the main question that you're getting asked?
Well, I suppose it's things like, will it really happen? What's planning permission?
Oh, yeah. Freddie, you asked that, didn't you?
You asked that. I like that. And Freddie, do you know what? Sometimes the adults can just assume everybody knows stuff, and it's really good to have those questions and to explain what it is. You know, what's next, what's happening, how can I get involved, what can I do? You know, it's all those sorts of things. But it's also just, where will it be? You know, how big will it be? You know, there's so many elements of it that people just want to know. But that information is out there. It's on our website.
Okay.
It's in the podcast. But if you've got something we haven't answered, please just ask. You know.
For the next episode, I'm going to do a kind of recorded drive to the site, so I can almost kind of like audibly take people to the site. And then we'll do, I think we should do the next episode from site and just even just walk around it. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
Well, we're real close to engaging the architects. We've had to wait. We've been really careful to make sure we've got the money in place before we instruct them.
Yeah.
They've given us a fantastic price.
Great. Well done. Do we want to name check them?
Robert Slim Brick. They're based in Gloucester. And they've built some really big sports centres and et cetera over the country over the last sort of 20 years or so. So they know what they're doing. We've just got to wait to make sure we've got the money in place to pay them before we instruct them.
How much do you
need? They're ready to go. We need about 50,000. We've probably got about 10 of that so far, but we're working on that. But you know, we're open to donations.
It's a great place to tell people.
I heard on Wednesday about someone who's managed to collect in $7,500. So, you know, those donations are coming. People are interested. We are pushing it open doors. So please, the sooner we can get that, the better.
So that could be done either by, I don't know, the kids putting on some kind of fundraiser, if you want to donate money as well. So we'll make sure that the link for the GoFund page is up there for you guys to do that and to find out how you can raise money for the park. But yeah, every little helps.
Absolutely. You know, it doesn't matter if it's 100 quid, it doesn't matter if it's 10 quid, it doesn't matter if it's 10,000 quid. I quite like those ones.
Yeah.
You know, it all
every
counts.
Every little helps.
It all counts.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, and then people say to me, but you're not going to be able to build a skate park for that. And of course we're not. We're going to need millions to build the park. But I've always said it, this first tranche of money is the hard bit to raise. Yeah. It becomes a very different thing further down the road. In fact, we're working with a finance company. We actually had a meeting with them yesterday about how we get the funding in place to make sure the build can go ahead, even alongside fundraising happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's a big important thing, isn't it, about it for the community to feel ownership of it. So, you know, whether it's a kid putting on a, I don't know, sponsored walk or something and raising 25 quid to a big corporation giving you a massive chunk, every bit of that is important.
It is. And it is about the community. Yeah. It is about what these guys say about family and involvement, you know, and it will be for everybody.
Brilliant. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, everybody. Thanks, Tibby, for that as well. And just give us that website again for people if they want to.
So it's rushskatepark.org.
Here we go.
Yeah.
Get involved.
That's all that's needed.
There we go. That is episode 2 done and dusted for the Friends of Rush podcast. Thanks so much to Debbie, to Ben, to Jay and Freddie. Weren't they absolutely brilliant? We're so appreciative to you guys for just being so honest and sharing your stories and just how much Rush continues to mean to you. And I hope if you're listening to this, it might encourage you to
subscribe to the podcast to get involved, or if you're curious to get in touch. And just to remind you of the details on how you can do that, the website is rushskatepark.org. And if you want to drop Debbie an email with a question or anything really to do with this, then please do. It's getinvolved@rushskatepark.org. Now, we have got an exciting event coming up that we've just announced, which is on Friday the 8th of September. We're very grateful that the people who own and run the Sub Rooms have given us the venue for an evening in Stroud. And so on Friday the 8th of September, we are having a fantastic celebration of music to raise funds for Rush Skate Park. It's going to be headlined by the fantastic Katie J. Pearson, whose brother, in fact, used to work at Rush. So there's a lovely connection there. And we've also got a few other special guests that we will announce closer to the time. Tickets are £25 in advance or £29 on the night. So maybe you want to save a couple of pounds and get involved. Or maybe you want to donate that extra £4 to Rush, whatever you want to do. But please come along on Friday the 8th of September to help us celebrate and raise money for Rush. All details can be found on the Sub Rooms website, and we'll also put links up on the socials for you guys to click through to buy some tickets. There we go then. If you aren't already subscribed, make sure you are so that you get the next episode as and when it drops, which we are hoping will be in about a month's time. But in the meantime, thank you so much and take care.